But I do want to maybe bring in another real-life experience very quickly with you, Madame Silpaveta, because we know that with Olivier Deschutes, you've brought up the idea of a global fund for social protection as early as 2012. So that's a good 7 years ago. Could you briefly explain to us the idea that you presented at the time? And then as you reflect on the current context today, how urgent, in your view, is the implementation of such a fund?
Thank you. Indeed, we presented a global fund for social protection in 2012. The idea was really based on the issue of solidarity of financing that we have been discussing. The proposal that it's very hard to summarize in very few minutes, that it was a very long one, but contained two branches. One, it was the what we call the facility branch, that it was to help states to, it was a fund that could help a state to implement social protection system. And another one that we call the reinsurance branch, that it was to insurance or to provide temporary funding for states that for some crisis or some shock would have an increased number of people that need access to social protection, or that they're been unable to, the state has been unable to provide. We made several proposals on, and very technical proposal on how this can be implemented, where this type of fund can be provided, and also the all a lot of consideration about the technical support. But this was 7 years ago, so let me leave that aside and bring what has happened, why this is critical. And I think that this is the main question that we need to solve now. I think that the world is facing a perfect storm with high levels of inequality, with a climate crisis, and with austerity measures that Isabel Ortiz has called the new normal and that we're going to have until 2024. And it is having a devastating impact on vulnerable and disadvantaged groups, in particular women and other and other groups. So we need to address this. We need to take measures. We cannot, As concerned citizens, we cannot accept the excuse of states that they do not have money to implement or to invest in social protection. Mm. We need to change that paradigm. I think that we have lost the cultural battle here, and we still believe that sometime if we invest in public services and social protection, we will damage the economy. That evidence is wrong, and we need to come back with the evidence. There is no way to fight the levels of inequality that we have today or to confront the climate crisis without solidarity in funding for developing countries and least developing countries, for increasing the mobilization of domestic resources in middle income and developed countries.
Mr. Herman, I've been dying to hear your voice. Madame Silpaveta speaks about a perfect storm. And we know that you've been thinking and doing quite a lot of thinking work around how do we safeguard national social protection systems in times of economic crises and in times of natural disasters. Could you briefly explain to us or elaborate your idea on of a compact, that's a compact for assured and sustainable financing of social protection floors in developing countries in the context of a perfect storm?
Thank you, and thanks to the ILO for inviting me, and for those who are interested, there's a paper, it's still in draft form, and you can find it if you, on this compact, you can find it if you Google me, but Google Barry Herman New School. If you Google Barry Herman, you will find that he is a band leader in New Jersey, and he plays weddings and bar mitzvahs. And that's not me. Okay, I'm an economist, and as an economist, you know, we work by making assumptions. And so let me assume that we have a government, country X, that in consultation with its population through its legislature through open debate in the press, through civil society engagement, develops a sustainable development strategy and an integrated national financing framework to implement that strategy. I'm wearing my financing for development button, so I'm giving them a shout out. And that as part of it, they adopt an adequate, efficient, and sustainably financed social protection floor. This is an assumption, right? But let us assume they do that. Let us also assume that individuals who receive interest income from bonds prefer not to receive that interest if it comes at the cost of people who have been devastated in a hurricane or through a drought or just through an economic crisis of one form or another, that they would rather wait and receive their income from those bonds at a later stage. Let us also assume that the people as citizens say to their governments, well, you know, you have loans to countries, and when the economic situation deteriorates or there's a crisis, we would rather you did not collect the interest at that point and delay repayments at that point, and that you would instruct the international financial institutions like the World Bank to also delay their payments. So it would be a kind of risk sharing between the ultimate beneficiaries of the loans or the bonds and the people in the countries that are doing the borrowing. Let us also assume that the International Monetary Fund keeps to its mandate, and which is helping countries have sustainable macroeconomic situations, and that it eschews some of the structural policy requirements that it has required of countries. I have, in mind impediments policies that were required, for example, in the late 90s of Korea and of Indonesia at the request of the U.S. Treasury, or the pressure that came from the Europeans to squeeze Greece, okay? So imagine you have that International Monetary Fund. And then imagine that there were funds you could borrow from the International Monetary Fund just by asking. I mean, you'd have to say, yes, I have a crisis, I have a balance of payments problem, and I could use some funding, and you go to the fund and you say, please, can I have some money? And it's a loan, but it's a zero-interest loan for low-income countries. Imagine that you could get it. And at the same time, you could also, if you were a high-debt country, postpone your debt servicing. So not only would you then be able to continue to finance your social protection floor as you, before, even though your revenues have gone down because of the economic crisis, but you would be able to expand them to meet the emergency demands. How could you get this? Imagine that you could make a compact, let's say, and you say, okay, I will adopt efficient, adequate, and sustainable social protection floor. And in consequence, the IMF would say, yes, and you can come take money as you need it, for emergencies, and you can delay payments. So that would create an incentive on governments to actually engage in this activity. Is this totally crazy? Would David Cody take food out of the mouths of babies to pay interest to Wall Street bankers? I know David a bit. I somehow I don't think so. does the IMF actually do this kind of lending? In fact, they do. They have two rapid facilities. They're not large enough, but if a country has a decent Article 4 consultations considered behaving in an appropriate way in terms of its macroeconomic policy, they can just go to the fund in an emergency, ask for the fund, I mean, assuming they have a balance of payments need, and get the funds. In fact, they recently increased the access limits of countries in fragile situations to be able to tap in these funds. So it's not totally ridiculous to think they could even increase it more. And finally, there are bonds that have hurricane clauses. Barbados and Grenada already have these bonds. And there are people who have interest in these things. There are term sheets to a basic sketch of how a bond contract would be written with a hurricane clause, and you can imagine for drought and for other reasons. So this is not totally impossible. It's a question of doing it. Thank you.
So let's do a quick test. So Mr. Herman says, I do not believe that this is a totally crazy idea. So thumbs up if you think